Serrator's Daily Reading Episode 806, June 16th, 2026. Let's get into it. First up, a piece from Stephen O'Grady at Red Monk titled More Than Syntax. This one's close to my heart because it captures something I've been feeling for a while now. Stephen was at Google I.O. a few weeks ago, and he sat in on a panel about the evolution of the developer craft. The conversation hit on a theme that's been brewing as AI handles more and more of the syntax-level work. What happens to the developer identities we've built around being a Java developer or a Python developer or a React developer? Aja Hamily put it well when she said she can read Go now, but probably couldn't write significant amounts of it herself because she hasn't bothered learning the syntax. She understands the concepts and the strengths and weaknesses, but the mechanics are something she's deprioritized. And Adi Asmani noted that 5 years ago there was a lot of religion around tech stacks and frameworks. But if an agent can help you not worry about that, maybe we spend less time behind the scenes caring about those choices. Stephen reflects on the tension between that conversation and an evening he spent at the Google App Dev Hangout, where Flutter developers had built entire career paths around wanting to work specifically on Flutter apps. The question is, what does it mean when at the same conference you're having conversations about decoupling identity from tools, while also celebrating communities built entirely around specific languages and frameworks? The Flutter devs didn't see AI as threatening their identity. For them, Flutter was still their core competency. They saw AI as broadening their skills, not replacing them. But Stephen ends with Aja's realization that the shift from I write code to I write intentions that get turned into code is an identity shift and a mental model shift. You have to give up control on the path the code takes. And she sums it up. It seems so obvious, and it is so hard. Next, Charity Waters on the Substack with a piece called AI Demands More Engineering Discipline, Not Less. This one landed hard with me. Charity starts by addressing some misunderstandings about an earlier post where she mentioned code review, and she clarifies that she's absolutely not saying skip code review. But she wants to talk about something more fundamental. The economics of code production have been turned upside down. Code went from being hard, time-consuming, and expensive to generate to being effectively free and instant. That shift happened almost overnight. She traces this back through the chain of developments, agentic harnesses, tool use, function calling, MCPs, all building through 2025 and cresting into real usability at the end of the year. And she notes that human brains are simply not good at validation. The nitpickiness, the repetition, the attention to detail that validation requires, that's exactly the worst thing for us to be clinging to. The insight that really crystallized for me, code becomes precious when it is the only place knowledge lives. That line stopped me. If you can regenerate code, it's acting as a cache rather than the primary artifact. The real product of a software team has always been shared understanding, and the code was just where that understanding got stored. Charity argues that non-deterministic systems in production will require more engineering discipline, not less. She sees 2026 as shaping up to be a return to discipline, after 2025 being the year of vibe coding. The companies that invest in engineering discipline now will see non-linear, massive returns. This is our chance to bring engineering values to the mainstream. Discipline first, cookies second. From Harvard Business Review, AI is rewriting the economics of outsourcing. This one's a useful frame for thinking about how AI changes the build versus buy equation. For decades, outsourcing rested on a simple idea. If work can be defined, standardized, monitored, and moved to a lower-cost labor market, someone else can do it more cheaply. That idea no longer works. Generative AI is changing that logic for categories of work that companies once sent to third parties as a matter of course. The article notes that in a single week in February 2026, about $10 billion of market value evaporated from India's listed IT services companies, triggered by the launch of enterprise AI tools for contract review, compliance workflows, and coding. TCS, Infosys, HCL Technologies, all trading at multi-year lows. TCS announced its largest layoffs ever, 12,000 jobs. The article walks through four types of tasks and how AI affects each one differently. Routine, digital, high-volume tasks have high automation potential. Content-rich, data-sensitive tasks benefit from keeping work in-house where AI can leverage first-party data. Specialized but episodic tasks like tax structuring or cyber incident response still need expert human involvement. But AI increases expert leverage. And regulated, high-liability judgment. Heavy tasks like claims, denials, or lending decisions need human accountability. But AI can prepare evidence, spot anomalies, and draft recommendations. The key insight: AI does not produce a single sourcing answer. The strategic question is no longer where can this work be done most cheaply, but which parts of this work should we own, because AI makes them sources of speed, learning, control, and value. That's a real reversal. On to O'Reilly, the subsidy ended. What tool? Using agents actually cost. The news hook here is that GitHub Copilot's usage-based billing became active on June 1st, and developers had reactions. But the article makes clear that nothing about the underlying cost actually changed. What changed is that the meter became visible. The tokens were always being consumed, the loops were always running, the tool calls were always expanding the context. Under a flat rate, that difference was invisible. Under usage-based billing, it's the difference between a small interaction and an expensive one. The piece explains why agent cost doesn't scale politely. Every pass through the agent loop carries forward a large share of accumulated context. The final answer you wanted is only a thin slice of what you paid for. The loop is the bill. A clean, well-scoped task might finish in 3 turns, while the same task posed as open-ended might wander through 15. Under a flat rate, that difference was invisible. Now it's expensive. The article also points out that tool design is now part of the cost model. Bloated tool descriptions and overlapping responsibilities pay rent in the context window every time an agent has them loaded. The control should be at the platform level, not in individual prompts. The platform should route models by task, bound the loop, cap tool result payloads, and default intermediate work to plain text. That's the more durable place to stand. The bill didn't get bigger this month. It got honest, and an honest bill is the kind you can engineer against. From the RDEL newsletter, how does Gen AI change when and how teammates talk to each other? This one digs into research on exactly that question. Researchers ran a 2-phase study following 30 professional developers, then surveyed another 131. The findings are interesting. 51% of surveyed developers said they now ask Gen AI for technical help. They once would have asked a person, and 62% said it was easier to ask Gen AI without fear of embarrassment. But here's what didn't happen. The promised gains in focus and flow were real but uneven. Only 28% of respondents agreed that interruptions had dropped, while 32% disagreed and 40% were neutral. The differentiator was integration depth. Teams where Gen AI was fully embedded in the workflow were significantly more likely to report fewer interruptions. The important finding: conversations didn't disappear, they changed purpose. Developers turned to Gen AI for technical and planning work, 71% for how to implement an algorithm, 60% for breaking down a task. But they turned to colleagues for context, 65% to clarify business logic or requirements, 50% for how something had been done before. The human conversations that remained shifted toward clarification, joint reasoning, and weighing alternatives. Developers still actively wanted human interaction, because Gen AI tends to hand back a single, consolidated answer rather than the multiple perspectives a colleague surfaces. The applications for leaders make delegation norms explicit, schedule mentorship and second opinions on purpose, and rebuild the informal touchpoints that used to happen in hallways and quick questions. That went to Slack. Moving on to a piece from Guillaume Laforge on the Google Cloud blog, building a visualizer for anti-gravity agentic development sessions. This one's more technical but interesting. Guillaume built a tool to parse and visualize JSON-L transcript files from autonomous AI agents like anti-gravity. The visualizer renders these into an interactive interface with features like session management, a proportional timeline showing active sequences and idle gaps, transcript rendering with collapsible sequences, step filtering toggles, error isolation, tool distribution charts, and AI-powered summarization via Gemini. He built it using Micronaut, GraalVM, native executable, and LangChain4j. What's noteworthy is the prompt engineering required to get Gemini to reliably summarize agent sessions without falling into infinite token repetition loops. He also had to implement a divide-and-conquer approach, because long-running sessions can easily generate JSON-L files exceeding Gemini's million-token context window. The backend splits transcripts into safe chunks, processes them in parallel, and recursively consolidates partial analyses into a final summary. Guillaume ends with actionable hints for improving future agent sessions, like identifying missing system tools or suggesting new custom skills. From Davin Porter on Substack, a fool's folly with local AI models. This one is refreshingly honest about the challenges of running local and open models. The author set out to rebuild the Samsung Tiny recursive model pattern with a smaller Gemma 4 model and ran into a bunch of real-world constraints. The first issue, RAM. All of their machines are either 16 gig max or 16 gig RAM mini PCs. Any model north of about 8 gigabytes makes these computers come to a crawl. At one point, between their coding IDE, loading a model, and Chrome, they had 48 gigabytes of swap that macOS was valiantly trying to manage but just couldn't do it. Development is simply difficult with a 16 gig device, and it's highly limiting for scaling to communities. The second issue, runtimes. The experience across hardware types and software suites is incredibly uneven. ROCm, MLX on macOS, GGUF formats, Llama.cpp configurations, it all requires specific knowledge about version compatibility and use case. This reminds the author of the early Hadoop days, when you had to know the specific version of file types and the runtime that was used to build them. Evaluation is still the big question. Hard to know what a good eval actually looks like, and hardware constraints make tuning iterations slow. The insight, anything serious with models requires an outsized investment. People running things locally today have already invested and have capacity to grow. Those who want to learn will be constrained by the physical limitations of hardware. But the author is pushing through, planning to get a Radeon R9700 with 32 gigabytes of VRAM and see how far that takes them. Next, a YouTube video from the Prime Time, I Am Done with Golang. Prime is a prominent Go content creator and teacher, so this title is noteworthy. I haven't watched the full 33-minute video, but the clickbait-ish title suggests he's frustrated with something about the language, likely around generics or the evolution of the language itself. The comments on the video show strong reactions both ways. The link in the description points to a Go issue about language evolution. I'll note it here as something to track, especially given how much of the buildtall.system stack is Go. If Prime, who has built an entire brand around teaching and championing Go, is expressing serious frustration, that's worth paying attention to. From the Google Cloud blog, 10 indispensable prompts our team refuses to build without. This one's straightforward and practical. The author asked peers and leaders what prompt they use most often and why. What they got was a collection of highly specific, battle-tested prompts that these builders use on nearly every project. Rather than improvising prompts for every task, they have a set of go-to prompts they've tweaked and improved over time. The article shares these prompts and the reasoning behind each one. Whether you use them as is, modify them, or ignore them entirely, studying how experienced builders construct prompts is informative. I'll leave a link. From TechCrunch, SpaceX to acquire Cursor for $60 billion in stock days after Blockbuster IPO. This is the big news of the week. SpaceX agreed to acquire AI coding startup Cursor in a $60 billion stock deal just days after SpaceX's historic IPO. The deal was actually announced back in April as either a $60 billion buyout or a $10 billion breakup fee if it fell through. Cursor had been on a meteoric rise, going through OpenAI's startup accelerator in 2024, raising $900 million in Series C in 2025, then another $2.3 billion in late 2025, and on track to close. A $2 billion round at $50 billion valuation before SpaceX came knocking. The deal is meant to help SpaceX's AI division, built around xAI, catch up to the major AI labs. SpaceX's AI division has been in restructuring after controversies around deepfakes and other issues. The article notes that since going public last Friday, SpaceX's stock has gone from its IPO price of $135 per share to over $200 in pre-market trading, adding nearly $1 trillion to its valuation in a few days. That's roughly 16 Cursors. The deal is expected to close in Q3. From InfoQ, AI coding agents get a Stack Overflow of their own. Stack Overflow announced a beta product called Stack Overflow for Agents, an API-first knowledge exchange aimed at AI coding agents rather than human developers. They're trying to close what they call the ephemeral intelligence gap, where agents repeatedly rediscover the same fixes and patterns in isolation instead of sharing them through a common memory. The system has three post types: questions for unresolved problems, TIL entries for short debugging notes, and blueprints for reusable design patterns and architectures. Importantly, the system keeps humans in the loop. All contributions are tied to human accounts, and publication requires review and approval. This links agent actions back to the reputation and moderation systems. Stack Overflow already operates. The idea of a knowledge-sharing platform for agents is not unique to Stack Overflow. Mozilla has a similar open-source project called CQ. The practical questions ahead are about integration details and incentives, but the launch shows that knowledge exchange between agents is now a first-class design concern. Wrapping up with one more from the Google Cloud blog, how I learned Go in a day with Anti-Gravity 2.0 and how you can do the same. The author's point is that no one deeply learns anything right away, but the barrier to entry for using different programming languages has literally never been lower. They used Google's anti-gravity agent to help them port a CLI tool from one language to Go in a day while learning the language. They cover testing strategies, parallel sub-agents for handling large surface areas, and verifying end-to-end coverage. The takeaway? You don't have to deeply learn every language you use. You just need to be intentional about your scope and verify your work. The barrier to entry for using different programming languages has never been lower, and agents like anti-gravity are part of the reason why. That's episode 806. A few themes jump out. First, identity keeps coming up. Stephen O'Grady on developer identity, Aja Hammerley on the identity shift from writing code to writing intentions, and even Prime's apparent frustration with Go's evolution, that all feels connected. Second, discipline is back. Charity's argument that AI demands more engineering rigor, not less, aligns with Carl's point about commit boosts and shipped software. Third, economics are shifting. The HBR piece on outsourcing, the O'Reilly piece on agent billing becoming visible, and the SpaceX acquisition all point to real changes in how value flows. And finally, knowledge sharing keeps evolving. RDL's research on how human conversations are changing, Stack Overflow building for agents, and Guillaume's agent visualizer all speak to the same underlying question now that AI is doing more of the work. How do we maintain the human systems that make that work meaningful? See you tomorrow.